David A. Price presents...
Hello, folks. Welcome to Marvel Noise episode 373. I'm your host, Steve Raker, but I'm not really here. Through the magic of podcasting, I'm on vacation in Surf City on Long Beach Island along the Jersey Shore and have set up Bot Steve in my place to keep the show rolling along on time. Marvel Noise is the semi-monthly podcast proudly sponsored by nobody. We talk about all things Marvel with a particular fascination and love for the Bronze Age. You can find, listen to, stream, and download episodes, past and present, over on marvelnoise.com. There's that handy little drop-down calendar-style menu on the right-hand side that brings up past months and years. Get new episode announcements and see images and cover galleries on our Facebook and Twitter pages. And find other fine podcasts from our supremely intelligent, thankfully benevolent host, Derek Howard, and the Deliberate Noise Network, which include Indie Comic Book Noise, our sister show, where we talk about indie comics. Item, the Baltimore Comic Con is almost here. They're a longtime friend of this podcast, and the Baltimore Comic Con is a comic-centric show full of fantastic guests and artists. It's one big artist's alley, and it's back at the Baltimore Convention Center in the Inner Harbor Tourist Trap Zone for 2021 on October 22, 23, and 24. There's already a substantial guest list. You can get tickets and more information over at BaltimoreComicCon.com. See you in Baltimore. I'll be there all 3 days. On this episode of Marvel Noise, our New Warriors August continues, with WWX Kevin and Andrew the LA Rabbit taking on our 12th installment covering all things New Warriors in the 1990s, with issues 29 to 31 of their original series. Should be interesting to all non-bots. So, what's Bot Steve been reading on vacation? Silly. Bot Steve can't read. He's just a bot. But he can tell you that Steve is fallen in line with Kevin and Andrew and began reading the prelude issues and the first chunk of the Star Wars crossover event, The War of the Bounty Hunters. Set in the period between Empire Strikes Back and Return of the Jedi, Han is frozen in carbonite and he's taken by Boba Fett to deliver to Jabba the Hutt, and this crossover event between the Star Wars titles Star Wars, Darth Vader, Dr. Aphra, and the Bounty Hunters fills in that gap. Solo has become the stolen Millennium, Maltese Falcon, kind of changing hands along the way and eventually making it to Jabba, where we'll pick up in Return of the Jedi, right? Now, of the new modern age post-Dark Horse Star Wars comics at Marvel, it's really been the Darth Vader book and the first spinoff, Dr. Aphra, that has stood out from the pack. And I mean both series of Vader. And it's kind of funny, because it was a lack of being able to use Vader during the old Bronze Age Star Wars run that really limited that book. And now Marvel's doing their best Star Wars by focusing on Vader in his own title. The first 5-issue arc of the current second Darth Vader series saw Vader investigating the truth behind Padme's death, and him taking revenge on those who hid her and his child from him, finding and ultimately aligning with one of Padme's handmaiden doubles, and discovering a lot more of the Emperor's lies that help him become Vader. In the second arc, running through Darth Vader issues 6 through 11, the displeased Emperor sets out to bring Vader back into his obedient fold by literally breaking him apart and chucking his amputated torso on the shore of a lava flow on Mustafar, like, just close enough to so that his leg stumps ignite, and then leaves, sending a new character, an armored and quite chatty assassin for the Sith named Ochi, to kill him. Vader's got a tough road to hoe, but by the end, while he's still pissed at the Emperor, he definitely knows who's boss again. And that leads into the round of prelude issues. Darth Vader 12, Star Wars 13, Bounty Hunters 12, and Dr. Aphra 10, where each series cast learn where Boba Fett is with Solo en route to Jabba. So the war event proper kicks off with one of those alpha issues. In this case, it's gloriously illustrated by Steve McNiven. And, like, the setup is solid. Fett loses Solo and has to reclaim him. And it's kind of cool. He's fighting in an arena painted in all stealth black, going by the name of Django. And everyone, of course, is after the prize, which is Solo. But like recent years' crossover events at Marvel, I'm happy to report that here, too, you don't have to read the titles you're not already reading. And if you are reading one of those books, its narrative doesn't get too derailed by the fact that they're participating in this War of the Bounty Hunters event. So, like, you're safe from both sides here, folks. The two Darth Vader crossover issues so far have been solid Vader issues, right in line with where the book is and what's come before. Well orchestrated to not take advantage of the reader's not-so-deep pockets. Kudos on this format, right? And I hope it continues for future events. Alright, Bot Steve's batteries are almost drained, so he's tapping out to recharge in a nutrient bath, trying to stay clear of the Jawas, and gonna listen to Andrew and Kevin doing some more New Warriors while Steve sips exotic beverages on the beach. Later!
Welcome back, Marvel Noise listeners. We have our 12th segment in our ever-increasingly long New Warriors coverage. What's that? You say the New Warriors is where we are going back in time and starting from their very first exciting debut in Thor 411 and 412 in New Warriors number 1. You can go back to episode 332 of Marvel Noise, sketch that. And we're just kind of going through mostly making sure we cover New Warriors. We also cover some other stuff, you know, there's some spin-outs and annuals and crossovers and limited series, but mainly we're focusing on the New Warriors here. And by we, this time it's just myself and WWX Kevin. Super Steve is taking the night off.
Yeah, that's weird for Super Steve. I mean, maybe a longtime listener will say, well, that's not weird at all.
Well, as I like to introduce these segments, Kevin is our resident New Warriors expert. I'm new to the scene, and Super Steve just reads the good ones. So maybe that doesn't bode well for this episode. We'll have to stay tuned and find out. As is tradition with our New Warriors segment, if you haven't been keeping up, I like to sort of set the table about where we are and what we're doing. And then I also like to kind of just, you know, figure out, give context to what we're doing a little bit. I know longtime Marvel Noise listeners are familiar with our Thunderbolt segments, which lasted years. And this one, I'm trying to put things in context. So we're jumping back into New Warriors, the main series, starting at issue 28. This puts us at the end of November, like cover date, November 1992, I believe. Around that time, you're looking at the launch of Spider-Man 2099. So, you're looking at Super Soldiers getting launched from Marvel as well. Kind of the wrap-up of the NOM. So we've just had the big explosion fairly recently of, like, you know, X-Men number 1 getting rebooted was the year before. Things still going well. Andy's still sort of reading comics, but this is kind of near the end for me. Money's running out, and I'm just kind of trailing off. So there is a chance, I think I've referenced, I may have read some of these, but that's kind of where we are in the real world. Kevin, 92, where are you at roughly? Are you reading books? You're not reading comics? Where are you going? What are you at?
Yeah, I'm into my second year? Like, I'm definitely enjoying comics and everything, but I still think I have a small group of books that I'm reading. I think I'm just randomly picking up some issues, like if the Infinity War is going on or back issues or whatever, but still a relatively small number of books I'm reading. I mean, New Warriors I had just recently added to my pull list with maybe 26, did I say last time? Something like that.
Yeah, this is, it's an interesting time. We've had the sort of beginnings of the excess of the 90s, what I think, but there's still a few titles that are kind of transitioning. So it's a fascinating time for me. As longtime listeners know, like I said, I'm kind of out for most of the 90s. So while I've been revisiting it, it's interesting because if you weren't reading it contemporaneously, it's a time of very interesting and strong reactions.
Yeah. I noticed in these issues that feel like we're like moving further into, like, you can feel the 90s coming off of some of these books.
Yeah, oh yes. I'm going to comment on that.
But it's so strange because all the hallmarks of comics or previous eras with subplots and storylines and all that is still in this book, but like that's mixing and melting with like 90s concepts, so it's an interesting stew, that's for sure.
Yes, I really like it. If you're following along at home, you can get these on the Unlimited. I have switched over to the New Warriors Darkness and Light trade. One of the things that started this was I had the omnibus, but we've actually gone through the entirety of that omnibus. They don't have all of New Warriors Volume 1 on the Unlimited yet, but so far you can follow along at home. So that's just, we'll let you know, should we continue the segment. Spoiler, at least I've went and bought some of these back issues that are not there yet and everything. But should you wish to continue, I try and say where the issues are if they're available so that you can. The Unlimited, I think, is the best deal in comics. I'm not a huge digital comic guy, but man, it's super convenient having all this stuff there. Kevin, how are you following along on these issues?
Now I'm in issues. I mean, I read, it's funny, like I'll read a little bit in issues, then I'll pop to the Unlimited, then I'll look back at the issues. It just depends when I'm doing what day, and I'm like, oh, I want to check something out or something. Another thing for context for the issues is, you know those little squares where the barcode would be in the corner?
Yes, the ones that reference either whether it's direct market or newsstand.
Yeah. So on two of these, it has 30th anniversary, The Amazing Spider-Man, 1962 to 1992.
Nice. And the trade, weirdly enough, they just black out the box.
Yeah.
Which I have no idea why, just for the first two. And then for the other one, it goes back and it has a little, like, Grim Reaper character in it, which is just so strange.
Yeah, I'm 31. Strange. It does have the Grim Reaper character, too.
Yeah, I know. Sometimes I know there are licensing issues, but I can't imagine what those licensing issues are.
Do you still have the thing, though? Like, on top of, for issue 30... It also has that giant, like, starburst, and it says Beyond Video, the new Dragon Quest game, details inside.
Yeah, I don't know why. I mean, I guess that's, you know, when they upload this thing, at least for the trade, they just include those things on it. But it does seem like a weird choice. So anyways, we're picking up on 29. If you're following along at home, in our last episode, it was kind of a catch-all. Night Thrasher is going to take an increasingly prominent role, and he had his first limited series, which we covered, and we covered the Christmas special. The team has been fractured. You know, is Night Thrasher part of the team? Is he not? Kevin, as tradition has it, you normally kind of set the lineup for us. So who are our current New Warriors?
I would say Night Thrasher is currently on hiatus from the book because he has a bunch of stuff to deal with in his own limited series. But other than him, oh, and I guess Marvel Boy is in jail, like in Where in the World is Carmen Sandiego? I mean, that's still stuck in my brain after all these years.
Well, he's in the vault, I believe.
Yeah, I guess it's funny to say jail, but yeah, I guess he's technically in the vault. The vault is still an ongoing concern. I just remember the vault. Is that the first? That might have been around one of the first time I found out about the vault when they had that Venom one shot.
I always liked the guardsmen and the mandroids.
Yes.
Were some of the various enforcement mechanisms. I thought it was smart that in the proper MCU they sort of elevated, so you just didn't have police or guys with guns. They were low level, but at least it made it a competition. You know, it made sense that, well, you can't have guards for like the Absorbing Man or something. You need regular people with like low level power. So I like those options that were added in to the whole mix of it. But do you got a lineup for us, Kevin?
Yeah.
Our new Warriors.
And yeah, the Guardsman's getting a Marvel Legends figure this year, so that's cool. Yeah, you have Speedball, Robbie, our bouncing, bubbling, I don't know how else to describe him. He has a lot of kinetic energy, and he has all the bubbles. The bubbles that are fun to draw that bounce all around him. Or more like bouncing balls, I guess. And I mean, what do you think that feels before, like when those things hit you at high velocity?
We are years before Penance is going to show his head, too. So. I've always liked probably the Ditko Origins. We might have to, that first series that I only think it went like 11 or 12 issues. Maybe that'll be something we can cover. Fun, lots of fun. Sort of another one of those, let's reboot the Spider-Man formula of young hero learning his powers, kind of a lot of trouble at home type of thing. Makes it, but his costume stuff is a lot of light banter.
Yeah.
And, you know, oh, I don't know what I'm doing, I'm out of control type of thing. This one, we see him a little bit more serious.
So I've, like, passed on his trade paperback. I don't know why. Like, the last time I was at a con, probably. And now I'm like, man, I should have picked that up. And now I'm wondering, is it better than Nova series? I'm like, it can't be worse, can it?
For me, I like Ditko's art, even that 80s stuff.
Yeah.
For Marvel. I just really enjoy it, so it doesn't matter if it's Squirrel Girl or Chuck Norris Karate Commandos or Speedball. Like, I just like his artwork, so. Yeah.
I like how they call him the Masked Marvel, too. Then you have Namorita, who is our hybrid swimsuit-wearing Atlantean. I guess she's technically the team leader. She seems to exert a lot of authority and over this team now.
Yeah, I would say, because Night Thrasher is in his own limited series, she has sort of become the one they look to.
I mean, she has a lot of power.
Additionally, it's a little ambiguous. Obviously, her character history goes way, way back, you know, 50 years.
Yeah.
So while all these characters are like young heroes, because a lot of them they're plucking from different time periods, it's a little awkward sometimes massaging what version of the character we're looking at.
Yeah, they're not exactly all new characters that are all young teens that... like it says, oh, they're the teens of the 90s or whatever, or they're going to change the world, and it's like, well, sort of. I mean, when you're a new reader, you might think that they're new characters. It's one of those situations.
And certainly it's not like Namorita had her series before this. She wasn't... Nova was definitely higher profile, for sure. I mean, there's some character... There's another one, I'd say, that's... And Speedball was also, I'd say, higher profile. We'll have a debate about one of the characters when you get to her about whether she was higher profile or not.
Firestar, Angelica, our mutant master of radiation, who's... as an ongoing evolution arc.
Yeah, for her, I would say in the real world, she was more popular from the Spider-Man TV show.
Yeah.
But in the comics, I always felt up until this point, she was really kind of a X-Men tangential character.
Yeah. with the Hellions involvement and all that.
Yeah. I mean, she did have at least one limited series, and she goes on, I feel, to be like a much bigger deal eventually.
Yeah.
But I think we're still like, and I don't want to, like I said, I'm not putting down the TV show. That was huge, arguably bigger than the comics. But I always feel like, oh, this is, she's kind of on her way to leaving the show behind in a way and becoming more the comic book character. And like you say, she has important business we're going to get to.
The Nova, old Buckethead, space war hero. Like, the even reference, like, oh yeah, he started, like, I was fought in that once, which is funny, because we've been covering that stuff recently.
Hopefully Marvel Noise listeners will enjoy that. Also, it creates a few tonal issues where that I might touch upon, that when I guess aliens don't count when you kill them in war.
Well, if we remember the Thunderbolts coverage, when they were trying to get off the planet and Moonstone's just like, oh, let's just kill this guy. And then they're shocked and she's like, what's the big deal? Aliens?
Yeah.
Bugs? Yeah, insects? Let's get out of here.
Because Nova in that Skrull War saw some pretty bad things in the front.
A year! You literally reference a year, because I remember, like, that voyage seemed to be going on a long time. Oh, too funny. Silhouette, who's sort of here.
Yeah, she shows up because her power is she can move through darkness.
Yeah.
It makes her a good character to show up when needed and leave just as easily. She's kind of our bridge between Night Thrasher and the main team.
Yeah.
And that, I believe, just leaves one. I don't, unless you're going to bring Cord back or something.
Oh, no. No, just Rage. Our resident tough guy. Big guy. Strong guy.
And for me, his costume renovation feels very Wonder Man. The red and green motif. Don't really mean that as a compliment, but I don't mean it as a big detraction yeah. either.
I mean,
I do feel some of the character designs might be part of the weaker point of the 90s in some ways, and I'm not just talking about pouches and stuff, but I feel like I would have enjoyed some maybe different choices. He just feels like a generic guy in a bodysuit.
That's the thing, he had the initial, like, more of a wrestler look, and
yeah, the now, leather jacket, the, I jeans. Mean
that's what they went to now, and that was fine. But I feel like the design they're going to get to later, spoilers, probably one of my favorite, like, probably rivals the original. I mean, it is kind of 90s too, but I really like it. And then Firestar gets another costume reinvention here, and that's also a good one. And I know they try to muck around with some of that stuff, but even, like, George Perez sometimes can't give these characters the best outfits.
No, I feel like, and I think I've mentioned this before, the Firestar has the problem of the lot of red hair and the red mask.
Yeah.
I feel is a contrast opportunity. But so, but this green red Rage is not your favorite one currently, or is it?
No, this is just sort of an in-between look.
Okay.
I mean, well, it's not as bad as some other ones, but
well, issue 29 finds us the New Warriors against their, I guess, their group. I mean, is this going to be their Frightful Four or whatever, the forces of nature? I'm not sure.
Maybe. But remember, there's the Psionics. Is that what they're called? You remember the group that was very early, like issue four or something?
Yeah, the genetically engineered ones.
Yeah, like the Mathematic and all those guys. I think of those guys more as, like, really their guys. Well, but I guess the Force of Nature is effectively, like, one of those types of groups.
And here we continue on with Fabian is still writing this. And I think we mentioned last time we've transitioned to Derek Robertson. And here, regular anchor Larry Malstat and Brian Garvey. So I feel like Derek Robertson, great with the facial expressions. Like, if you need your character to be angry or mad or something, He really looks, I feel like he does a good job with that. But as I mentioned in the beginning, I feel like some of the 90s excesses are definitely bleeding into the book visually.
We're going to get there. I feel like some of the references I can pull out now in these issues, which I never would have got at the time, like they have this TV series that New Warriors are being interviewed on, because this is one of those favorite time-honored techniques where we're after an event, and they're using an interview TV series to say, oh, something happened, and then we're going to flash back to that, and we're going to start going back and forth. But I feel like I wouldn't have, like, if this is supposed to be like an MTV type of show or something like that.
I definitely got that vibe.
Yeah.
I mean, one of the co-hosts has a bunch of jewelry, and I'm rapping with you today on RTV.
Yeah.
It just doesn't seem like a current affairs type of rapping with you. Seems very extreme. And, yeah, the out of order stuff didn't bother me so much, but I don't think it adds anything either. I mean, it lets them have a cliffhanger or two.
Yeah.
Which I guess in the monthly book helped, but it didn't. Clearly you can tell something went wrong as they're giving this almost a mission debrief, but to an audience of teenagers, it seems like,
well,
a weird.
That's what I'm like, do teenagers really care or think about these things? Or, like, I don't think, like, I wouldn't have got the whole MTV thing or some of the stuff. Like, I'm not even, like, I'm not old enough either. So I'm like, it's a weird thing here. And then they get into one point, like, there's other stuff like, oh, well, you know, you're at the age to be drafted into the army and everything. And I'm like, this stuff is not connecting with me at this point at all. Like, but it doesn't bother me from enjoying the issue back then or now. It's just interesting that it's there.
I do predict this would be the lowest rated show on whatever pop culture network you're on. Like, hey, we're gonna rap about pop culture and wars in the Middle East and everything. So,
like,
it seems weird.
Yeah, like, I know later on, like, I would see some of these, like, on a music channel where they would be like, well, it's like an after school special or something, or let's discuss what happened with 9/11 or whatever, and they would bring some younger people in to try to make sense out of things.
Yeah, there's certainly a market for that, but it feels like, I don't know, it feels weird. I agree with you. But I do like that you can clearly tell, like I said, something went wrong. They're kind of sullen. And it drops them in the middle of San Fakistan, a made-up country,
yeah,
in the middle of a civil war.
This wouldn't have anything to do with the Gulf War or anything, would it, Andrew?
I wanted to say, I really don't think Big Two superhero books are great at talking about some of these real-world issues. Like, I feel like it's such a weird world with superheroes that trying to push them into some model where it's like, yeah, what if superheroes, and when there was a war, a foreign war, how would, like, I just feel like Marvel and DC aren't built for that. Like, yes, you can have special things like Watchmen where you specifically show, like, what happens when superheroes come in, but there it's like one superpowered dude in the whole you know, and they meticulously built this thing, not a couple of issues here and there. So I'm generally not thrilled with that, because I've also mentioned this before, I don't like pulling that thread. If superheroes were real, we'd have, like, lots of new tech, probably, like, food insecurity would be gone. You know, like, there's all these things that the world would be radically different in 6 months, so that it wouldn't be the world outside your window in any real way. So I don't like pulling on the threads about, well, why don't the superheroes just end war? And why don't they just end, you know, I just feel like it's not useful in the Big Two universe to walk down that path, because you're not going to get a good answer, I feel.
I've been, funny enough, I've been thinking about a bunch of these things lately. Because I guess there was some criticism that goes around every so often about certain things. And then I was like, why doesn't this other thing get the same criticism? And I feel like whenever they try to do a series, like, what if they took place in the real world? And I think they even tried to do that at Marvel at, like, was it the late 90s or 2000s? Like, I remember some book, and it's like, it never really fully explores a premise. Like, maybe you need a larger series. Like, I don't know. It was always disappointing. And if you're going to set up, oh, why doesn't this happen? And it's like, well, it didn't happen. And then you have to set up, like, another opposite force for why it didn't happen that was keeping things in check. And things just get too serious.
Yeah, I just feel our world would be so different the second you put all these crazy superpowered people in it that you just spin out. And it, like I said, we'd have flying cars and all this stuff quickly. And like, why couldn't they just stop the war and then be superheroes involved in war? Like, it would just be all these things that would be, which you can't do and keep a status quo in the Marvel universe. You can make like an ultimate universe where, you know, then you wipe out New York City or do whatever you want. But if you want to keep some type of fairly recognizable United States with superheroes, there's like a polite fiction where we just don't look at those questions. We don't really ask those questions.
Yeah.
Because I don't know how you, like I said, they're all, every bank robber supervillain is a billionaire just by selling their tech, rather than building a robot to rob a bank type of thing. So not where I want them, but I do like here that they start us off with a lot of fun action. Well, dropping, once we get that premise set up, you get a double page spread and the New Warriors in the middle of this civil war in Fakistan.
Yeah, I think it's better to just focus on the fun rather than like people like, oh, there should be consequences for a bunch of stuff. And so, like, something like One Piece, it's like he's throwing around continents and doing all this crazy stuff, and no one ever thinks about consequence there. But it's like, it just gets into a whole thing. Yeah, you're pulling at threads.
Yeah, and I just, and that way you can just have, like, Galactus show up one day, and they think about the fight with Galactus and Galactus as an entity, but you're not thinking about how that's going to change society ever more. You know, you're just like, oh, yeah, they fought they convince Galactus to leave type of thing instead of, I don't know, you can focus it so it's interesting stories and you can talk about real issues. You just can't do it by placing them in a real world. You do it with metaphor and relatable stories and other things that get that concept. Like, you can have themes about bullying or whatever you want. You just have to put it in this fake world and follow the fake world rules.
Yeah. Like, I think I felt like Valiant was more into that real-world stuff, but, you start getting into some interesting problems in those types of situations.
Yeah, I just think it's not sustainable.
Yeah.
If you want to keep it to be, like I said, a world we recognize. Now, if you want to take it like Watchmen or something else where you're going to destroy the world or make it totally alien after a year or two, that's fine, too, but then you're going to have a hard time with these continual universes keeping that, you know, going for 10 or 20 years or whatever after you've destroyed the world 100 times or something like that. But I think they still keep within the strictures here as far as I just ignore some of those points. I was not familiar with this fake country, Kevin. Were you?
I was, because some of the footnotes are to Incredible Hulk, and I know there's an issue of X-Factor 2, because Peter David was writing those two books at this time, so I think it was in the X-Factor Visionaries I had read about this country before.
Now, for me personally, I went and pulled those whole, because it was a footnote with issue numbers, which I still appreciate, and this might be, you know, 92, we're looking at the end of that happening pretty soon. I decided that I would go pull those on the Unlimited. And then I liked it so much, I actually pulled I have the CD-ROM of the Hulk so I could look at the actual issues. The fake country is Trans-Sabal. I know I'm going to call it all kinds of goofy fakistan and all that, if anyone's that interested. Well, I would suggest those Hulk issues because it's the same thing about three issues talking about superheroes intervening in a civil war in this country. But I really think it's Keown, Farmer, and David. And Keown and Farmer, it's interesting because they have some of the excess 90s design things with like big guns and pouches and all that, but they're still drawing not in that style of Liefeld and those guys. So it's an interesting mix of like all this, like I said, tech and ammo belts and all that army guys, but not the crazy goat feet and all the other stuff that I... So I recommend it on the Unlimited. I also recommend it here. And it's also interesting to see Peter David talk about how he does this. And it's the same kind of... He makes his characters a little more extreme. So the bad guy is more clearly the bad guy. And the good guy is more clearly the good guy. But a very serious moment, Rick Jones makes a pretty substantial decision that you can contrast with what the decision the New Warriors make that makes it interesting. But it's just, you know, two different teams handling a very, not just a similar place, but the idea of foreigners in the Civil War. I might have enjoyed the Hulk ones a little bit more, but that goes more to my stylistic thing. But like I said, check them out if you get the, if you're on Unlimited or you have the CD-ROM or the issues. You don't need it, because I read all this stuff first and then went back and read that. You don't need it at all. They set it up fine. You just need to know that the Hulk was involved in this. As a result, the leader died, so his relative took over. The leader was a dictator. He gets killed. The dictator's relative says he's really the new leader by blood. The army doesn't agree and leads a war. And then there's a third force that's introduced who wants to purportedly fight against the tyranny of the army and the king. I'm going to call him a king just for lack of convenience, even though obviously there's a dispute as to his ability to claim that title. But so just remember, three forces involved here. I didn't have as much of a dog in the fight, I guess. I felt it was a little disjointed, and maybe that's jumping the time around. I felt the Hulk issues made it clear who was who. Here, sometimes I wasn't always clear what was going on. I mean, I know nominally they explain they're here, the New Warriors are here to get the forces of nature out of the country.
Yeah, it's supposed to be nature, much more simpler.
But I thought it was told in a way that wasn't. So they're here to rescue them. Forces of nature are ecologically based. In this country, there's a lot of oil, and the oil wells are on fire. So that's their motivation for it. So New Warriors break up the big fight, and they end up saving the rebel forces who are facing the superior forces of the Mandroids.
Thing I really noticed through some of this is the expressions Robertson's giving the characters, like when Rage is like lifting up one of the little like Mandroid things, he's like super gritting his teeth.
Yeah.
And then like it's like a page later, like Namorita's totally giving the gritted teeth impression too while she's talking. And I'm like, man, these things are really sticking out.
Yeah, they're pretty angry.
Yeah.
In this thing. And I think that's to its credit, to show that they're passionate young people. I think we've mentioned this new character, but the new member of the team in a support facility is Sprocket. She is a helicopter pilot, weapons specialist. Sort of think Amanda Waller meets G.W. Bridge or something. Like, tons of armament, a lot of attitude, like, wants to fight all the time. I feel like the helicopter is a real weird choice, and I don't like it. I feel like they're better off with some kind of future-y sci-fi Quinjet-esque thing. Hmm. I don't like, because they're like, oh, we've got weapons, and it's a woman in a helicopter with machine guns. And it just feels like you have Namorita and Nova. They're way powerful, more powerful than any helicopter. Like, how is a helicopter... And it's got to be slow compared to... you know, if they're flying the helicopter from the United States to the Middle East, that's not a short flight. You know what I mean? But I don't know. I just, for me personally, I would like some kind of, you know, spaceshipy Quinjetty thing would have felt better. And then, you know, the power level can be whatever you need it. But this, they're not going to take out any serious supervillain with a helicopter. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like, it just isn't. In the Marvel Universe, the power is not... And same with her with a machine gun. So many of these guys got laser cannons and grenade launcher machines and missiles. Give her some of that.
Do you think someone nowadays would look at their pilot's rocket and think it's like a parody character almost? Like, they have super pouches, like the massive machine gun, the whole attitude and all. It's straddling a line, I think.
Yes, but I think if then it wouldn't have, then it was on the front end.
Yeah,
I mean,
yeah.
It's going to get a lot more extreme, believe me. I mean, not necessarily in this title, but comics in general are going to see a trend towards even bigger guns and more pouches and all that. But she's there, transpo, getting them around. And so the leader of the rebels is like, hey, thanks. And this is intercut with the MTV stuff. There's also a brief side plot noting that Silhouette's not there and questioning the basis of her powers. Doesn't go anywhere now, but I just wanted to mainly focus on the Trans-Sabal stuff and not, I think we've gotten everything we need out of MTV. Yeah. There's another effect where Namorita's being questioned by Guy Rich. And we might also cover that at the end or cover it contemporaneously. Again, it's that they're telling the story kind of out of order. But basically, they find out that forces of nature are fighting down by where the oil wells are on fire, but there's going to be a firefight around the oil wells. And I thought, like, we don't see any of the oil wells burning or the firefight, like none of that stuff. Like, it's all the violent stuff
pretty much. Yeah, I got a phone number for you to call though, Andrew.
No,
you can not... you can join Ghost Rider on the road to vengeance.
No,
call
no
1-900-88-GHOST.
Yeah, do not call that number, people. But here the forces of nature have a slightly revamped team. Firebrand, the Iron Man villain, has filled in as their fire component.
Yeah, I believe he also showed up in a Spider-Man book around this time, because that's probably where I saw him.
And they do the whole earth, wind, and fire motif. Yep. But these teams have mixed it up. It's also a little weird. The new warriors go right to fight them because they want to have the superheroes and supervillains, even though it thinks it would be better if they just took out the army that's going to fight the firefighters, right?
Well, yeah. I mean, they have to keep on switching up who they think they're going to be fighting and what they think they're going to be doing.
Right. So it's a four-man crew on the forces of nature. Aqueduct, obviously water guy, Skybreaker, air, Terraformer, earth, and Firebrand is the fire.
You mean poor man's Whirlwind?
Yeah. So they're all, you know, mixing it up. But it turns out that the general, remember, he had split off from the fake king or the real king, depending on your viewpoint, and is in Mandroid armor, which also seemed weird that, like, in modern warfare, not a lot of generals kind of leading the way, but I guess they want this. And it's fine. Look, it's Dr. Doom runs a country. Like, you can be a strong man who is literally a strong man. But Aqueduct locks into him. And we end up in a three-way race-off between the general, Aqueduct, and the rebel leader. And Namorita also has a gun. And so she's left in this, like, who do I shoot? You know, Aqueduct is going to drain the guy. He can kill you by having all your water leave you. Which seems pretty gruesome, actually.
Yeah, I would say so.
And then the other ones have guns, so she's like, what do I, you know, the only way to save one is to kill one. Then we cut to MTV, and then we cut to the basement, where she's getting grilled by Gyrick about, so what happened? Who did you kill? Yeah, she answers, I killed him.
Yeah, apparently she did the deed.
Yeah, but I mean, this is obviously a weirdo fake out. I don't really. Part of me feels like it's a weird choice, but it makes sense. You know, you got a monthly comic. What I thought was an odd choice is last page, when they're doing this thing, it's like all these really narrow panels that are really long, which I thought was interesting. Like, I thought you'd normally go maybe like a 9-panel grid or something, but instead they do roughly almost the same number of panels, but they're long and skinny. I guess that's to get more dialogue in, maybe. I don't have an objection or anything. And they do a thing where they kind of have her face and the insert panels over it, kind of. It was just weird to me.
Yeah.
It was interesting, I guess. I mean, look, it's different, you know.
I think I was used to Larson doing that, but it was for action scenes, not for just like a face-to-face talk.
Yeah, I didn't know if it was just, like I said, it lets you fit a lot of dialogue in, which is nice. But it just looks kind of odd. The other thing is they're in some basement, so everything is green, like they're under some green light or whatever, which is fine for a couple of pages, but I would not have wanted too much of that.
Yeah, because this is the commission on superhuman activity. This doesn't have anything to do with... they don't want her to... get up and start fighting them or anything.
Yeah, they interfered, and as a result, the general was murdered. And when they ask who killed the general, she says, I did. I killed him. So we know, even though we don't see, you do know that the rebel leader lives. Presumably, Aqueduct lives too. I mean,
yeah,
I guess they could murder him, but that's where it leaves you off. And then when we cut to issue 30... we're back with the same team, except Malstead's the sole anchor on this one. And the cover has Namorita with two very different guns in the issue. Pointing, and Speedball saying don't, and she's pointing at the reader. And as you say, we can learn about the Dragon Quest game.
Yeah, they're trapped in a horrific desert conflict. Has Namorita finally gone too far? Well, has she?
Yeah, well, she killed that guy, Kevin.
Apparently.
We saw it in the last issue. So we pick up at the three-way standoff, and here the kind of longer panels make them fit in a little bit better, and they just lay out where it is. But the thing is, she can't kill him. So she can't do it, which is a different result than those Hulk comics, which I thought was interesting. But she feels responsible because her failure to act results in the general getting zapped.
Yeah, we knew something was going to happen.
So, and then she does a big, why? And she's all frustrated. This part I thought was a little interesting from her characterization. Because before she wore that revenge armor.
Yeah.
And she's an Atlantean, and I'm pretty sure they have wars down there. It just seemed like I get they want to make them not bloodthirsty, but it's weird that, as you said, Nova remarks that he's been in space war and everything. But they seem very like we're not having any casualties. Which I can respect, but it seems weirder for that character given her long life under the sea. But anyways, you want to make it so she's nice and not murdering people.
Yeah, they want to save as many lives as possible and make the world a better place. But they're not exactly sure who's running all the long cons here and if they're making the right choices.
But they do stop all the fighting, mainly by stopping the forces of nature. And then, but that seems to be about it. Like, you don't see them engaging the regular troops.
Yeah.
You just have Namorita comes back. Once they defeat the last of the forces of nature, Firestar has to burn off the mold off of Nova, which does not, you know, seem like a good plan.
I like how Firebrand tries to escape and Sprocket just finally gets a chance to just shoot him down.
Well, I think we assume that she knocked him out and didn't murder him, but you never know. So it was weird that Namorita just announces the fight's over, the army unit is routed, and we saw none of the army. I don't get that. And then they're going to take the forces of nature with them, even though aren't the wells still? I mean, I guess the firefighters are just going to put them out or something. I don't know. It seemed like this was part of the ambiguity of like, wait, wasn't the point to put out the oil well fires? Like, what's going on with that? And that's all off panel and not really talked much about.
I mean, yeah, the force of nature should have been really concerned about that. So, I mean, isn't that part of their deal to do the environmental stuff? Like, that should be their number one priority.
I don't get why. And it's kind of intercut with more of the MTV and the Guy Rich. And that's when he admits, oh, you didn't really kill him. You're just guilty. You're going to be guilty your whole life. You know, you screwed this up for us and America. And I like the point where she's like, I'm not American.
that's pretty good.
That part was a lot of fun. But anyways, so they're going to take the rebel leader and confront the king. Because I guess now that the general is dead, the army's just giving up. That's the other part that's weird. Like, just because the general's dead doesn't mean that the army is going to go back to the king. You know what I mean? Like, there's going to be someone else who's second in command. And maybe they're going to go with the king. Maybe they're going to go with the rebels. Like, you don't. Maybe they're going to be a third party. They want to have this sophisticated thing, but they have all these... When you have something so complicated, you can't really do it in two issues and have big punch-ups in it. You know what I mean? Because I was just like, that doesn't mean the... Unless they murdered the entire army at that fight that happened off-panel, like, they're still the army. And it does make me question, like, well, if the army rebelled, what is the king using for his forces in a way? But
I don't know.
But it turns out, so the new warriors, they drag the forces of nature. So they're going to take the rebels to confront the king or the fake king. And this one, they decide to just end the fight quickly with a very nice double page spread of Firestar using her microwave powers to short everything. But I really don't like it's. They changed the orientation on the spread. And that was something from the 90s that I felt was done a lot for not as much justification.
Yeah, how come this seems to go the wrong way? Doesn't it?
Yeah.
Yeah, it seems like it should read the other way.
Well, also, I mean, I guess it's fine, is it? But I would be happier with a single page spread oriented vertically rather than this weird one. But it's not that it's a bad image or bad composition. I just hate that, like, unless there's a story reason, now we're going to flip the books on its side. It just, to me, it kind of snaps me out of the story a little bit.
Yeah.
The flow is a little different.
Well, it's funny, there's enough story in here, but they seem to be giving Robertson enough time to do these fancy splash pages, too.
Yeah. Well, I will say I do appreciate that they kept action in this thing and didn't make it all political intrigue. But I do feel like it's a weird... It was just, we're going to see some of that. And I associate that with the 90s. Not that it was done exclusively there. But I seem to remember there were a bunch of books where suddenly you'd have to turn... You know, there was some weird oriented image page splash. But the rebels capture the new king. And they have a face-off, and that's where the new king points out that the rebel isn't actually from Trans-Sabal.
Uh-oh.
And that he has interests from the... He was supported by the foreign side, who is going to take oil land as concessions. And I was like, whoa. But not really, because I was pretty low invested in this. I just... Like I said, the confusion about who's where, and like I said, what happened to the army? Like, they lost a battle. They didn't all die. And made this all confusing to me. But was this like a gut punch to you, Kevin?
I was just kind of rolling with it. Like, I wasn't... I mean, there's a bunch of different sides. I'm not really rooting for anyone, necessarily. Like, I just... I guess who you're rooting for is, like, for the new warriors to live up to their principles and hopefully do something good, right? But you don't really know what side that necessarily is.
No, I thought they could have I don't know. It's hard with two issues, too. Like, you're getting out. Because then the forces of nature point out that, like, there's still all these fires and it's driving them crazy. So Firebrand's like, let's just kill the king. And they stop them from killing the king. And they realize they shouldn't have got involved and they leave. And I'm like, well, aren't the fires still burning?
I kept on expecting them to say, well, we're going to leave. But before we go, we're going to put those fires out.
Because I get that there's, like, what side do you back? There's no right or wrong. But you can definitely put the fires out. Like, nobody's saying that that's a bad... Like, yeah, okay, maybe you shouldn't have gotten involved, or maybe you should. Like, that can be debated. Is anyone pro-oil wells burning? Like, I mean, they have some throwaway line that, oh, the oil wells went out when Namorita's being grilled. But I'm like, we don't see that. They leave while they're still burning.
Yeah.
I guess they leave with the force. And the other thing is they're never clear if they leave with the forces of nature. It seems like they capture them or whatever.
Yeah,
but
that was their mission.
Like, you don't see it. It's not like you see them in the back of the cut. Like, they just fly out and Namorita cries over the thing.
I feel like there's a premise for another series here where the force of nature takes over this country, and that's a whole other book.
Yeah, that because they Firebrand suggests that would have been fine. And then at the end they all meet up at their base and they're glad that Namorita hasn't been kicked out. There's also a weird panel where, like, it feels like a product placement or something. I don't know if it's Nova, she's giving her speech about, yeah, they yelled at me, but they can't do anything. And Nova gives her a Coke. And then there's just an insert panel of her holding it. And then she gives it back to him. And I have, maybe that's a reference to something in pop culture at the time. But it was just the weirdest, like, she has a soda, no dialogue, and then just gives it, like, is that meant to, is it a call? That reference was lost on me. Kevin, do you know?
She was under those hot, hot lights too long, and she needs some water, Andrew.
But it says cola on it. You can clearly see that. It was just the weirdest. I felt like there's something there. They're referencing, like I said, maybe it's something, a commercial and pop, you know, something that is long forgotten to memory.
Are you sure this isn't a reference to some ad that was at this point in time?
I just don't recall any. But then they're like, you know, it's that whole thing about they tried to do good and it didn't work out and they didn't put the fires. I don't know. It was one of those. The Hulk one, I suggest reading both. They're a nice comparison. That took 3 issues. This took 2. A lot happens. You know, it's well told. It's just, I feel like it's just too, they needed to iron it. They needed one more pass of, like, maybe we cut out and just have 2 forces. You know, maybe that helps clean it up. Maybe we make it clear what forces of nature are doing. Like, they're just fighting, like, were they, you'd think Firebrand could help put out the fire. I don't, it just, some scenes of them putting out fire, just those kind of, I get they lost the point of this, but whatever. Anyways.
It's terrible, it's weird confusing. That he's on that team to begin with. Yeah. He doesn't really care about anything.
Yeah. But I did like, we're going to end with 31. And I thought this was a nice kind of wrap up of some threads. And this is our same Robertson, Malstead, Fabian. But this is an X-Force, which is strange enough. X-Force appears in that Hulk. And now we have some X-Force appearing in this one.
Yeah, I wonder if Fabian is writing X-Force at this time. Like, I'm not 100% sure, but I kind of love that we're going back to the X-Men connection again, because there is definitely, like, those continuity things between the books, and it won't be the last time. Well, and I'm reading the X-Books, so I'm definitely digging what they're throwing down.
Yeah, we already had the Hellions mixing it up with the New Warriors when they recruited Firestar. So it makes sense that these, you know, there's those links already built in. And here we're having Cannonball and Warpath are the ones. Again, they're going to Nova Roma, which is the Roman city that was in the jungles that Magma was from, for New Mutants fans, from way back in the day. That was back in the 80s.
Yeah, I looked at this on Marvel Unlimited, and I could have sworn that this was a double page spread. But then when you look in the issue, it's just sideways on one page.
I don't. It's a weird. So they do two pages on their side. I don't. I mean, maybe they had to get the information, or maybe he really wanted like the Roman buildings in the. I don't know. Again, my own personal pet peeve. I find they interrupt the flow and are kind of annoying.
Yeah,
but...
because then the other page is sideways too, and then I looked at that one and I'm like, well, that's weird that they would have had two double-page spreads in a row. And I'm like, but it doesn't look like there's enough content for the other panels to make up another two pages. And I was like, what is happening?
No, but so they show up, have a, you know, a page or two of fighting with the locals. And then Empath and Magma show up. And they are wearing their Hellions. That kind of, it was all the same outfit. For those of you that remember the Hellions team. So it's that kind of pink and purple with the gloves and the little symbol. It was a fine. I mean, I'm generally less on where the teams all wear the same outfit. Like, it can work, the original X-Men and Fantastic Four and all that, but it's I prefer, I don't know, it's just more interesting to see exciting designs and
I think
people
so.
Go crazy. It's comic books.
And then sometimes it ends up looking really awkward on someone like Wolverine. You're like, not a team player.
So, there's a side plot in this one about Rich Rider and the girl he saw way back in Annual 2, how that's his budding romance with her.
Yeah, I wonder if she shows up in his ongoing series.
Well, we haven't seen Caps or any of his other... But they've made a pretty clear break that he's at least well past high school now, so maybe he left out those, but... So they're all, you know, Warpath, Cannonball, Firestar are explaining the communications were cut. And the reason they're here is to give the bad news that the Hellions were killed by a mutant time traveler named Fitzroy.
Yes.
The White Queen was put into a coma by a bunch of Sentinels.
Were you jazzed when you heard that Fitzroy was name checked?
Well, like I said, I kind of liked the old New Mutants Hellions rivalry and battles and everything, but I gotta say, this point in the X-Men, I'm pretty checked out. It started going a little weird for me.
Yeah.
And well, it became so intensely, it felt like the continuity, although clearly the Hulk showed that the X-Force was able to be extricated separately, but I felt like so many of the titles were sort of densely interwoven.
Because this is funny. I'm almost coming on to Uncanny X-Men for the second time and getting it at the shop. So, like, if I'd been reading these books and then you kill off, like, a bunch of characters, I would have been, like, maybe I would have been like, oh, I like those characters. But coming in as a new reader, I'm just like, I don't really know much about the Hellions. Although I do know enough about the White Queen that I'm like, she seems... too important for them to get rid of. And sure enough, she's back pretty fast.
Oh, so. Spoiler, Kevin. I thought that was the last we saw of the White Queen. Yeah, I mean, they're not going to get rid of anything. And besides, even when they get rid of them, they're just putting them on the side. If someone needs them back,
But it's like, it's still sort of like Image-ish creators doing what they want. Well, I guess Claremont's there too, but... he's slowly, like, not retreating. What do you call that? Like, there's definitely that, that friction
out,
there.
I feel like. Because, you know, they are starting to give ex-mutant. He's no longer running the mutant show.
Yeah.
Like, other people are now getting pulled in, and it's creating a interesting mix that had left me cold. But what I like about this issue, I guess, is I feel it's not only a wrap-up, but it lets, you know, we had a relatively dense couple of issues just about the Trans-Sabal War, and then this one we push a bunch of side stories and breather issue and interesting stuff, but they still keep action in it. So like I said, I actually like this one.
Can you buy that t-shirt though, where it just says Xavier's?
I don't in the trade they did not the t-shirt they're wearing.
Yeah
I thought you meant one of those ads.
No, not
in the
whole
one. I have the There's an ad, they're doing those Marvel classic tees which have a lot more background than I'm used to. Like, not just the character, but, like, the character with, like, flames or red or a cityscape or webs or whatever. Kind of as a intense background. But, yeah, the Xavier's is cool. Should say property of. But, yeah, so they're going to tell her that. And then Empath has taken over the town. But it doesn't work on Firestar.
Yeah, she knows something is up.
So now we're going to have her versus them. And then, again, as I'm saying, we're pushing other stories forward. So Speedball decides he's going to go live with his mom. His parents' divorce has been a long-running thing. His dad is a district attorney who doesn't like superheroes. So it seems natural that he would go with his mom. And, like, a really nice full-page spread of him using his power, bouncing around.
Yeah, that's pretty good.
And we've talked about how he and Rage have a good friendship building. And so they have some bonding as well.
I like that moment where they're like, did you know there's more levels to their, like, abandoned crash pad headquarters thing? And then I'm thinking, ooh, we need a map of all these other levels.
We got to get a cutaway. They're waiting for the next annual.
Maybe. Hopefully.
But it's not, you know, so we have some action of Firestar taken on. And now, like all mind-controlled heroes, they're not quite as fast or as sharp. So she's able to trick them into taking each other out. That's nice. Like I said, I enjoy the fight sequences and the art team and the storytelling's clear. And it's, you know, you need some of that in here.
Yeah, I don't know if we really focused super heavily on her using her powers in the war issues, but she was. And in here, once again, she's pushing out her powers in, I guess you could say, frightening ways in some respects.
I don't know what's frightening about her microwaving an entire city, Kevin. I mean, I really think you're being a little alarmist.
This is the 90s, so I'm also thinking about Fantastic Four when Johnny, like Nova bursts and he, like, burns down, like, Empire State University or something.
I like a lot of... So anyways, yeah, she microwaves the entire city. I'm sure that's going to be a long-term health problem. And she frees him. And it's over. But here's the nice kicker. Is that he was doing it to protect them from the lie. Because Nova Roma wasn't an ancient Roman settler.
Yeah.
It was Selene. You know, this was her group of vampire victims or... I don't know what you call cattle or what do you call whatever thralls or collection of people to, you know, draw upon or manipulate or use or whatever.
It's weird that they go back and forth on Nova Roma. And I really like the original idea. I'm like, that's just so weird and cool. And then they do this and I'm like, this is fine as well, but I don't know.
It was, I'm with you, I probably prefer the original one, but I thought this was a good way of cleaning up and adding this new one with Selene and shows that Empath, I mean, he didn't do the right thing, but he at least was a nice guy about it. And now he's going to help all of them remember who they are and get back to their real life, wherever they were, and leave this and end the thing. But you're right, it's kind of sad to see this cool Roman city in the middle of nowhere. It's like the Mole Man's kingdom or anytime you have a weird the Savage Land or whatever. And Firestar very environmentally burns all her old photos in a ceremonial,
Do you notice on these documents though it says Hellion's master file and then in brackets it says secret?
I'm just like, the way they burn, I don't think, like, burning all that stuff is really good for the environment. I think the forces of nature are right to attack the new warriors.
And what does it say on this building? It almost looks like there's some kind of weird Tetris lettering going on.
Yeah, I don't. You're right. It looks like, I don't know if it was a code or just he was kind of... It's his style, and he wasn't big enough, but basically, and as you hinted, here we get Firestar's getting a new look.
Yeah.
And they give us a couple pages, and this is how you debut it, you know.
Oh, yeah.
Although, I would have preferred a more, it's almost like a she's almost flying Superman style, and I wouldn't have minded if they just showed her straight up and down so you could see the... I mean, we know she has red boots because you can see her putting them on, but you can't see them in the full reveal. And then this is the dark blue, black, I don't know, it depends on the colorist and the reproduction, with the yellow and red and the clear, like, plastic visors thing. Look.
So do you like this one, though?
I like that they differentiate her hair from the glasses, but I think I prefer the other one in every other aspect.
Hmm.
I like that. I don't know, something about the clean yellow and red is really nice. The blue, I mean, I don't have any objection to this one. I just feel like those goggles kind of make it look like welding. Like, they're not, they don't read as superhero to me.
Yeah.
But they, you know, this is going to be her look for probably longer than the other one, right?
I believe so. And now if something runs at her eyes, like, it's a protective shield, too.
It makes sense, but I feel like, I don't know, I'm not, generally with these type of heroes, I don't need practical outfits. Like, she's not Iron Man or Spider-Man, like... She generates enormous amounts of power, as we've seen in the last three issues. I don't think she really needs the worried about getting dust in her eyes or whatever. But, I mean, the colors are nice, and it's certainly reminiscent of her old outfit, so there's no objection. I don't know the clean lines of the other one. But from your comments, I know you really like this one.
Yeah. This is, I think I'm more familiar with this one.
Yeah, and I would have been more familiar with it. Well, would it make sense? Look, I mean, put these... Some characters, I don't know that we want to redesign Nova. Because certainly, at least you have to keep the helmet the same.
And we if we ever do, like, another run... Yeah, there is that moment when they redesign Nova, and it does not look good. And then they get to the redesign in like, the 2000s, and that's... That's actually a decent one but that takes a long time to get to.
Yeah. Well, and I like Speedball. Like, I'm glad they kept him the same. I guess if we're counting Penance as his redesign, it's a big step down.
I mean, I don't know if you can... I don't think they're trying to redesign this one. That's just a totally different costume.
And as I mentioned, I think this current version of Rage, I don't dislike it, but it's a... kind of a nothing for me. Like, I think they would have been fine with his original one until they get to something more, make a commitment on it. So don't mind. Name Marita goes through all kinds of swimsuits depending on, I mean, she has the kind of basic green scaled one, but I feel like depending on how they're drawing her, it can be styled quite a bit differently.
Yeah. She's the Janet Van Dyne of the team.
But there's our three issues, Kevin. Where does this leave you? What are you feeling?
I'm feeling pretty good. I mean, not that the war issues were lower quality, but that 31, you just tap into some cool continuity there and sort of... I don't think we talked about it, but probably important for the next New Warrior segment is... there's that whole thing where that it looks like a symbiote shows up for a panel.
So there's questions about where the source of Silhouette's power. Is it Dark Force, you know, the blackout guys and Cloak, and they hint at Cloak coming? Or is it some other, you know, not everything is the dark dimension all the time. It can be something else as well, and we're going to find out. And the other thing, if I know my comics, they'll feel free to also retcon that back and forth 100 times, too.
So it's just, it's good that that's in there, too. Like, I enjoy all that stuff. And that's going to be setting up our next segment, too. So that's good.
Yeah. Like
all
I said,
fun stuff.
For me, the highlight was that last issue. The first two aren't bad. They're just, it's muddied, I feel like. Lost his point a little bit along the way, but... The team is seizing up. Like I said, Robertson in the faces is fun. He has, occasionally there'll just be a nice spread like the Speedball one, things that drop in. I mean, there's definitely room. The storytelling is always on point. A bit room for some of the decisions, like I said, I scratch my head about given panel orientations and long, skinny ones versus other ones. But Hey, that's my taste. It's not like it's a failure. It's just my tastes are not, don't lean that way.
And it's interesting, we're missing two members, so this is still quite a few members, but definitely a focused, smaller group for now.
Well, you know, it seems like these team books end up getting to the point where if you don't have a whole other sub-team, you at least have one or two characters off doing something almost all the time. You know, a subplot era, which I really like. I like that there's these different, they all have their kind of backstory, and it pushes like a little bit per issue or every other issue, or rather than kind of collecting them up and putting them in a more easily broken down trade scenario. I think I like this sprinkled in wherever. I don't know. It's probably just what I'm used to because I read so many comics like that. There's nothing inherently better about that versus grouping them together so you have a nice 5-issue trade. But I'm just used to it being kind of spilled out over however many issues, so we're going to get plot lines that take years to resolve.
And they're an expanding franchise at this point. So, and they have all their long histories, so you can also draw upon that to pull in who is going to be the lead for certain issues, because that's certainly going to play into some future issues.
Yeah, well, I hope we get Super Steve back for the next few of these. But yeah, I give it a thumbs up. Kevin, sounds like you give it a thumbs up.
Yeah, I think so.
All right, thanks for listening, everybody. Take care.
Later.
Steve's not going to let you get away with that.
Oh, he'll cut that out.
What shall we say? Shall we call it by name? Well, the counting gels dancing on the pin. What a bright as a sky before you came. The deepest on the earth it takes in. Will I speak but stand inside the rain? Listen to the thunder shout. Thank you all. We're going to take a short break. We'll be right back.